Good afternoon and welcome to your Drive Time Show with your favorite duo, that's Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM with your truly invisible guests called Holy Spirit, whatever it is you want to go with.
Silent Observer.
You're making it sound like, you know, we are in the middle of a, you know, war crime hearing. Silent Observer. Those are never good words.
Well, silent, yeah, and observer.
If they send you, you know, election observer, UN observer to your to your country, they are going, okay, how are things going here? Yeah, today is, well, as usual, we are here again to keep you company until the hour of six, Monday to Friday. We're here to, keep you company on, whether you are, working until late to burn that midnight oil, or you are, on your way home, or wherever it is you are tuned in. Welcome, and please settle in, because as always, we're here with yet again another exciting subject that, now today is about food, guys. Let's talk about food on a continental level.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, food is an important thing, Amber.
Yeah.
Continent wise as well, it's a little bit weird that we've got this crux of this matter coming about again, because, our biggest issue currently right now is happening in Sudan. And we don't know to what extent the damage is happening in Sudan.
Yeah, that's bad.
We don't know to what extent how bad Mozambique maybe is. Like, there's been now supposedly a meme going around that the heads of state that went and visited to congratulate and attend the inauguration ceremony of Hassan for her inauguration subsequent victory in Tanzania.
Yeah.
That there were only four guys. You can laugh. It's just for presidents.
Yeah, look, man, I think it's safe to say a lot of people saw that coming. You have to understand that, the political world is not very different from the corporate world. They're all based on a good reputation. So, the thing is, every time that I see, I look at what's going on in Tanzania, I can't help but think whoever is the presidential advisor for the Tanzanian president, is either that was a setup or they did a very terrible job, because, all those series of events that, that are now being called, a crackdown on political opponents. All those series of events were something that they have to watch very carefully. You have to understand, now you and I had this discussion yesterday, and when we had this discussion yesterday, and this was obviously off air, I couldn't help but think about it in somewhat related to our previous elections. I know that thank heavens it didn't go that bad.
Yeah.
But we had our disagreements here. Now, one way that I think I think it's also safe to say that we are very good at handling this is we had the same we had elections. Last year was election year.
Mm.
Like a bunch of countries all across the world were basically having elections, and so was Mozambique. Now, Namibia has its own election disputes all the way from usually when these disputes arise from how the elections are conducted, it tends to also bring that disputes into the results of those elections.
Yeah.
So, our elections ended up, of course, with the Electoral Court, with the National Assembly election, and the Supreme Court, that's for the presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, a judgment was made, and here we are. We didn't set any building on fire. Now,
we also didn't go and try to create chaos.
Yeah. Now, if you go
run around on an airport.
Exactly.
Oh, well, okay, I'd like to see.
And we didn't go and swim protests in the presidential swimming pool or eat the president's chicken. That was Sri Lanka. Now,
oh, I'd actually like to see.
Was that Sri Lanka or Bangladesh? Where protesters went to eat.
I think it was the Bangladesh.
Yeah, Bangladesh.
I
that was the Prime Minister's chicken. It was well fried for lunch. Madam left the country. Citizens were like, fine, we'll take it from here.
We'll eat it on your behalf. But I'd actually like to see protesters, protest from here.
Yeah.
To this thick 30 kilometers to Hosea Kotaku, and then go try and pull that stuff. That stunt that they pulled at Tanzania.
And I think you're going to run out of songs 5 kilometers into your...
People will go like, Neman. 30 kilometers is not a joke.
Yeah.
Then you've got to walk back, ne?
Yeah.
You've got to walk back.
So, now, because now a lot of connections are being made with the supposedly crackdown on political opponents, especially the major opponents. What I can help think about is that think about the time that we're having our own election disputes here in Namibia. Just picture a situation where the internet was shut down, and the people that want to know what's going on in the dispute are only speaking to the opposition parties. Mm. Can you imagine what type of a story they would have gotten?
Of course. I mean, I saw it even this morning specifically, Amber.
I can only imagine one, because that would have gone really bad.
Yeah. And the discussion even is one based upon how do you try to reach an African integrated society discussion? If you see, for example, a basic elections can't be conducted in a peaceful manner. Supposedly, according to the observer mission that went there, things were supposed to be peaceful.
Yeah.
But
supposed to, so it didn't, clearly.
Well, the observers were supposedly, they were not harassed, but they were sort of like accosted by security officials at various
polling stations. Yeah. Again, not good.
And the guys were clearly showing their observer status tags.
And they have
the SADC jackets and stuff on, which is pretty obvious. Those guys get like immediate access to the polling station. And in some cases, they were asked to delete photos of polling station because that is their research that they conduct.
Now, what conclusion are these people supposed to reach after that?
Exactly. And Hassan and her government, obviously, you know, they didn't give a response because apparently the various international agencies tried to call them to ask them government official response on the election claims.
Mm-hmm.
No one is talking.
Look, if you ask me, that's another blunder because, a piece of interview or more like a piece of discussion on that I watched from Al Jazeera. They, you know, the anchor did point out that they reached out, I think, to to ISS, political security analysis. Southern African political security analysis. I think I have one of those documents for those guys for today's discussion. And they reached out to ISS. Something of security studies. They are, Institute of Security Studies. Thank you. They are based in, I think they have a headquarters in Kenya and South Africa.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, they had one guy from the Institute of Security Studies. They had one guy, I think two, activist also coming out of Tanzania and one guy from the opposition party. But, guys, it's just the nature of politics. If you are going to ask me about my opponents in the world of politics, what good thing am I going to say?
You're going to throw them fully under
the bus. Exactly.
You're going to take it.
That's
like a
politics 101.
Throw
it's
them
not
under
rocket
the bus.
Science.
Yeah.
Even if the ongoing issues in Tanzania was being held, take for example the party that's President Suluhu Hassan's political party was the opposition party that was interviewed. Chances are very high they would have thrown the other guys under the bus.
Yeah, they would have
it's
done the
just
same
how politics, but unfortunately, that's politics 101.
Yeah.
So them saying that, first of all, we are going to questionably treat the observers that are basically, these guys are not, they don't belong to any political party. They're just there to observe.
Yeah.
We also had them here. They were here. They wrote one of my, favorite report that made one of my TikTok video go viral. But I love my life. Now first of all, you are looking at multiple things here that is making the Tanzanian current ruling party's reputation. And basically dragging it in the mud.
Mm.
There was a crackdown on opposition parties following the elections.
Mm.
Two, from the late Magufuli to Suluhu Hassan's administration, one thing they have in common is that their media transparency has always been a very questionable one. And the fact that they have always had a questionable media transparency, and then you have all the chaos going on, and they don't want to talk to the media. It's just cementing, if you ask me, all the terrible reputation that have been wrapped up, that have been building up from all these things. And that's going to take a while for them to basically clean that up.
Exactly. It is going to take a while, which is also the aspect of our discussion actually today. I know. We took our listeners to Korihas and then to Kamanyap and then to Tsumkwe. And then we ended up somewhere in I almost said Tivundu.
You know what's my favorite part about that?
Yeah.
Even women are complaining that, she might be a big dictator. I'm like, come on, guys, you should be happy. You know, the future is female. This could be your first dictator. Yay!
First female dictator.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about food.
Yeah, let's talk about food. So we set the scene there, dear listeners, so that you can now understand the particular climate that's taking place politically on the continent. Because every time when it's election season, there's a friend of mine who complained about Paul Biya's elections. And I said, obviously, yeah, the guy's halfway to becoming a fossil, but he lives in Switzerland and he's obviously loving the Swiss cheese being produced there.
Moses voted for Paul Biya. Are you kidding me? Okay, that was uncalled for.
Yeah. So, and Biya won, obviously, again. Biya won again.
Yeah. Wait, what?
He won again, bruh. Biya won again.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there's no continent that comes close to Africa. You know, we are the memes and we write the memes.
Actually, the memes write themselves. Comedians just, you know, pick them from there and then just put them on stage.
Exactly. So.
So, okay. So he's 95, right?
Yeah.
So he's going to be running for the next 5 years. He's going to be ruling for the next 5 years.
Well. I'll have to fact check myself again here. Seems like they still have their situation coming up. But
they better, because
Biya is. Well, there we go. Elections once again. Resulted in a victory for Paul Biya on 12 October. So yeah, he is. So, just solidifying the point that you made, yes, Moses did definitely vote for Biya. He technically wrote the Ten Commandments when Biya was probably stepping into office for the first time.
Back then when dinosaurs were pets.
And people could still write on stone slabs, yes. Yeah. Well, that was probably the most, you know, effective technology out there. However, the conversation I had there with that one particular friend who's sitting in Germany, she obviously is now there talking about, yeah, but look at Africa. And I told her, hey, listen, you are in a country, ne, where the chancellor was known as the Iron Lady, Merkel.
Yeah.
Merkel's nickname was the Iron Lady of the EU.
Yeah.
So, and Merkel caused actually more harm to other countries than her own country. She allowed for Spain, Portugal, Greece, and Ireland, and Italy to technically take austerity measures because she wanted to look after the German economy's prosperity during the 2008-2009 financial crash. So technically, Germany and France sacrificed 5 economies in order to uphold sort of like the overall well-being of the Eurozone. So when you sit with a scenario like that, yeah.
So they let other economies take the blow.
They let other economies cut down on their public expenditure, which led to cuts on pensions for public servants, investment projects for their countries and in the infrastructure sectors and the likes. But it actually taught those countries a good lesson because all those countries except Portugal are now the best performing countries in the Eurozone. Okay, Italy is like a mixed bag, but Greece, Spain and Ireland are the 3 best performing countries in terms of economic growth in the Eurozone currently right now. So now, We are still on the food discussion, guys. We're still on the food discussion because the food does not work completely independent from the discussions of what we started off with in terms of political stability.
Yeah.
The setting here is you can clearly see, Helmut, how flammable parts of Africa is when it comes to election season.
Yeah.
Now, it's one of the reasons why I don't understand us Africans. Yes, we either have state heads of state that are, you know, that they could even tell you about the origins of humankind. And in other aspects, you know, they are literally just new politicians on the block, but they're literally at the illustrating traits of, you know, being potential very, you know, very hardline kinds of leaders.
Yeah.
And it sets a weird precedent on both spectrums. When you come to Namibia, we've got this balanced, this middle ground country. South Africa is also a middle ground country. Botswana the same. Zambia the same. Who's the other country that's also similar? Zimbabwe. Okay. Yeah, Zimbabwe as well. Because the election observers that observed Zimbabwe's elections 2 years back, they could not find the supposed violences that were taking place at polling stations. They couldn't find the alleged violence scenes or intimidation activities taking place. They couldn't. I read that report and I was like, but what are the people talking about? What reports did they talk about, the journalists in Zimbabwe?
Well, you and I saw that with the, I think the South Africa's quote unquote Land Expropriation Act.
Yeah.
It's one example of basically how you should really read in between the lines when you are more like reading when it comes looking at things that are considered easy to sort of like twist. Because, the thing is, for the most part, most subjects end up, end up being narrative. Instead of just being given in their raw form, as from what's taking place on the ground,
definitely,
it quickly becomes narrative. Now, if I'm pro your political ideology, chances are very high I will parrot only your positivity and pretend like you don't make mistakes. But if I'm against your ideology, then I'll just push aside all your all the positive things that you are doing and then just focus on the negative. And that's just a world, as much as we don't like admitting it. Again, politics 101.
Politics 101. But here's the thing now. Now, obviously, the African continent wants to achieve like a food security complex.
Oh, yeah.
Now, politics 101 and food security scenarios is that you need a stable environment politically to have a stable environment anywhere else in your country or on the continent.
Yeah.
If we need to talk about modernization for that matter in the Namibian... Okay, let's start from NDP 6, Helmut. Let's start from our tried and tested discussion that we've had before when we did the NDP 6 analysis. NDP 6 in its whole format speaks about modernization.
Yeah.
Even though it speaks about, let's go and do industrialization in the agricultural sector, which sounds a bit, sort of like regressive in policy, meaning you're trying to go back to... agricultural based economy. Not everyone wants to go and live in the rural areas. Everyone wants to live here in the nice cities and towns with air conditions that possibly could give you hay fever and all kinds of sinus ailments. But you know what, you love the aircon because it looks like magic and it even has lovely sounds that as it switches on and as it switches off. However, when you read NDP 6 in its entirety, it's a modernization strategy. Let's modernize the Namibian landscape from community level to individual level to economic activity level to societal to literally how Namibia positions itself internationally. Now, go and ask yourself what's happening in the rest of Africa. Ooh. So they come up with a CAAPD discussion. Then they come up with a talk that I had last week about the Luanda Financing Summit for Infrastructure. And if you look at the speeches associated to both, because remember, they both happened at the same time.
Yeah.
The Luanda Financing Summit and the STC, the STC summit itself. The SDC speaks about agriculture, yes, food systems. The Luanda Summit speaks about how Africa should find its own or chart its own course with its own money and finance itself for its own destinations.
Just say its own money.
Yeah, I know. All the speeches said that. All the speeches said that. Lourenço, João Lourenço, because it was held in Luanda, Angola, also cited, you know, the Baines Hydroelectric Power Station, joint venture between Namibia and Angola. He cited the Lupito Corridor development. But I think the Baines discussion is more a Namibia-Angola discussion in terms of that both countries are actually, they bought into it and that they're actually financing it partially or to some extent. Whereas when you look at Lobito Corridor, it is development funding that is positioned there. And the development funding is sort of like a, I have to ask now permission from my neighbor whether or not I can actually paint the wall in the wall in my living room.
You see, political stability, I think, naturally, when it comes to political stability is required for any type of development, be it agricultural or economically, to basically progress. Whether that's whether the reasons behind your agricultural initiatives is to to combat food insecurity, or you want to take part, or more like process process those agricultural produce into packaged food, for example, and you basically value addition type of thing. All these things require a political stable environment, because if you have bombs flying left, right, and center, there is not a single investor that will say, "I'm looking at Sudan and everything is up in flames. I bet that would be an excellent place for me to to set up a car assembly plant." First of all, where are you going to get all the workers? If all the workers that you'll that you'll want to get from outside will say, "But that's a war zone," and all the workers inside the country will be like,
"But okay, that's a war zone."
Again, that's a war zone.
Yeah,
and that's some of them. Some of them will tell you, "Well, I would like to work for you, but the only thing I know, because and that's because of my environment, I only know how to pull the trigger."
Worst part is also, what happens usually with war zones or conflict zones is that you lose the most productive people.
Yeah.
So this is men and women. And then in many cases, younger generations are ultimately impacted negatively because, like you said, they only know the violence component.
Yeah.
There's that lovely, what was that gang of how many young men in DRC?
The public executions, yeah.
That was in the public executions? Yeah. It was well more than 10.
They were more than, I think they were close to 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
And it was one gang.
Yeah.
It was one gang that the police in that part of DRC
basically had rounded up. And
And if you want to see the level of such particular social issues, dear listeners, imagine having a gang of 100 young men.
And these are youth.
Youth.
Youth
that were exposed to wars because they come from the east, the north and south Kivu areas. And primarily they've been just exposed to how to work with a gun, what to do with a gun, how to intimidate someone else with a gun, how this gun is your best friend up until the day that that gun no longer recognizes you anymore. Mm-hmm. And primarily, how you settle engagements and negotiations with other individuals instead of, seeking the more humane avenue in of negotiations, interactions, compromises, and living, aiming to live within a peaceful setting.
Yeah.
When we've got a look at agricultural, rural development, water and environment, Helmut, many cases, where do most of these unstable elements take place? They don't. In some cases, yeah, sure. If you're Sudan, it's the cities. Because I don't know who loves fighting in between dunes. But yeah, you'll go and fight in the cities. The downside is anywhere else, it's the rural areas, the rural economies, the rural activities that get impacted. Firstly, what happens? They take all food.
Oh, it's worse.
They take all particular things that actually can contribute to upliftment, for that matter.
They're almost 200.
Yeah. Between 18 and 35 years old.
Yeah. That's your workforce.
That more than 170 people
That was before the execution that Amnesty International was basically criticizing the DRC government.
Yeah. But Amnesty International doesn't know about the social evils that the people on the ground in DRC had to live with when those 170 youths were literally running rampant. And where would they run rampant, Hamoud? In the rural areas.
Yeah, and that information is very easy to find.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the rural areas are the least protected. They're usually the least developed areas in African countries. And if you are thinking about a quintessential peaceful village, you know, scenario, many ideas people love popping up, because I see it on their social medias, they love popping up to a European setting.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue.
Yeah, so it's in the rural areas where those 170 boys and young men were
causing all the havoc.
Were doing Wild West and bully the kid mentalities. So when we look at rural development in Namibia, we've spoken extensively, Almut, about rural development in Namibia. We've looked at the community-based resource management exercises, which is a rural development component.
Yeah.
How we've got civil society acting and intervening there specifically for the benefit of societies and Namibian societies. We've also had a scenario in terms of looking at what government does in conjunction with the civil societies to achieve the rural development outcomes that we wish to have.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the NDB6 clearly also says this, that we need to have this balance of everyone working together. It shouldn't be an imbalance that just one side is doing everything, mm-hmm. while the other side is sitting in air-conditioned studios, for example, like us.
You didn't have to throw us under the bus.
Why? Well, you know, if I said air conditioned, then everybody would go like, ah, you too, ne? Then they immediately think about us. So, Namibia has its clear goals. Namibia has its clear set objectives of what they want to achieve.
Yeah.
I'll throw in another scenario, Helmut, also in terms of what comes with rural development as well, because agricultural centers are based around rural settlements. The discussion I had at the start of October with the Chinese ambassador China's particular developmental agenda from the 70s up to now,
mm-hmm.
was primarily that one key sentence always stands out, is that China had to push resources to, or allocate resources to, rural areas. Because one of my questions was, okay, so how did you deal with the modernization component?
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, because people now needed to finish grade 12, and they also needed to have to be educated. And now you had young people that saw the nice bright lights of the cities, and they said they would tell their parents and their grandparents, "Sharp guys, I don't want to be working in the rice fields anymore." Which is a similar scenario in Namibia as well.
Mm-hmm.
Parents, the kids would say, "Nah, I don't want to be looking after cattle and goats up to midnight in the bush. And then me and the hyenas have to be best friends with who makes the best joke, just so that our survival strategy actually shows who comes out, you know, trumps in that discussion. And just behind the bush would be a lion waiting for who is actually going to be the last man standing."
Yeah, and hyenas are never serious. They'll be laughing throughout all that chaos.
So, when we've got to look at rural development in Namibia, rural development, Helmut, has to be a discussion of what are the other African countries going to do? We know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's not the ridiculous thing of putting a factory in every constituency. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's the notion in terms of literally developing things that speak towards plausible developments. And when I say plausible developments, I actually mean plausible, something that works, something that can be tangible, not a
you
factory.
You want to talk to me directly, just talk to me directly, don't go through the corners. No, I'm saying that on behalf of a certain party.
About the factories in every constituency.
Yeah, yes.
No, but it's
plausibility.
The plausibility is a scenario that has to be explored. Because, I mean, who made such speeches? Who wrote that thing, firstly? I'm not there to target them
mm-hmm.
or knock on them. But when we look at planning,
the chances of pulling that off are really slim.
And who's going to, what factory is going to be put where? Just to find out people don't have grade 12 or there's no.
Okay, maybe they had a clear blueprint in mind.
Or there's no clear, there are no factory age working adults and people in those communities. Where are you going to bring the people from, Helmut? And now we're going to sit with issues where people are complaining, yeah, all these guys that are coming from various other parts of the country just to work in my factory.
Yeah.
The factory was supposed to be us, but it's a whole bunch of 90-year-olds complaining. I'm sorry, guys, to illustrate the 90-year-old component. But rural development is an ugly thing because we actually see a lot of people moving about. They would hear about opportunities and they actually move. Look at what has happened with Ausenkir. The arguments have been there about Ausenkir. The arguments have been there about parts in Omaheke. And also parts of probably Tsumkwe, the farmers with grazing. And not Tsumkwe, there's another place there. How far is Gam from Tsumkwe, Helmut?
About, I think about 100 kilometers.
100 kilometers. Yeah. Around the Gam and Tsumkwe areas, there were always these accusations of illegal livestock herding and grazing. People pushing their livestock into the areas because they see
protected
it's...
protected areas.
Because they can see, you know...
Literally greener pasture.
It's literally the grass is standing there, but their cattle have overgrazed in where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Now, when you're sitting with that scenario, obviously what happens? People complain. They would call radio stations and newspapers and journalists and tell them, hey, listen, Dwight is busy pushing his cattle there into our communal area, and it's a nightmare.
You know that example of the question you asked the Chinese ambassador about how they navigated through the for them to get to the accomplishments they've reached today, especially with regards to how they handled the whole urban pool and rural push, because people are looking for opportunities. And wherever they are, that's where they're going to go, which is why urban to rural migration is according to our recent statistics, when it comes to rural to urban, population distribution, we're almost 50-50. But if you look at future projections, urban populations are projected to increase and the rural populations are obviously going to decline.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's because we are trying to figure out whether if we want to be an industrialized country, an agrarian one, or both. Now, trying to balance the two now will require a lot of will require some type of strategic upskilling, because now we want people to participate in agriculture. You also want to industrialize. You want to build machines, and it's not impossible. It's just that it takes more than picking one. In terms of whatever basically any type of investment, anything from water, energy, skills, and you name it. Now, in this discussion that this discussion that recently the discussion that took place last month.
Yeah.
The sixth ordinary session of STC, STC, RWD. On my way here, just decided to cut it short to STC, RDWE, and was organized, don't ask.
It's six technical committee, agriculture, rural development, and economic something. It also took me a very long time, Helmut, to go like, what is the STC for?
STC, RDWE. they basically do explain everything.
Yeah.
It turns out, the whole initiative goes back to 2003.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this session that was held in Addis Ababa last month was more of a transition from the old session that was set to run from 2014 to 2025. And now the 2025 one was concluded, and then basically was concluded. And then also the event was also set to mark the beginning of the one that's going to start from 2026, and it's going to run up to 2035. Mm. And it's all based on one thing. How do we as a continent produce food for ourselves?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when I found out that the discussion goes back to 2003, I couldn't help but ask myself one question. You remember back in 2022 when the African Union, Macky Sall was chairing the AU at the time.
Mm.
Yeah. Had to fly to Russia to sit with the Russian president and go like this wheat. Can we have some?
And please don't blockade Ukraine.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Because, well, this is in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're here eating brown bread, not knowing where the wheat is coming from.
Who's eating brown bread, Helmut? Everyone loves brown bread.
Yeah.
Okay. Not everyone. There's some people that actively like kids.
Yeah, they like everything in white.
Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can elaborate on that, but we'll get fired.
Helmut.
Anyway.
You know, this day is lovely as it is.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
With a nice weather. So, let me give you a little bit of a summary. Yours truly here preferred. By yours truly, I mean moi. According to the French. Speaking of the French, there's this German company that's very good at making ladders, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of their ladder was used to, steal artifacts in a French museum. And you know what that company did?
What?
They took a picture of that ladder and then used it as the promotion. Yeah.
Look, we are so good, you can actually steal things.
Yeah. In case of emergency, we got you.
What does it sound like, the Toyota example?
These guys are not serious.
Where the Americans went and asked, hey, why is your Toyota Land Cruiser here on battlefields in Yemen? Well, we don't know. The order is just being placed out of Dubai.
Yeah, bottom line, a reliability check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It runs in all weathers.
Uh-huh.
All sandstorms. All kinds of conditions.
All terrain.
Just add on an anti-aircraft.
You can throw that in the back and you are good to go.
Yep.
So,
You're still talking about the summary.
In 2003, the AU launched what they called which is basically still called the same thing today, Comprehensive Africa Agriculture Development Program, or CAADP, following the Maputo Declaration. Obviously, this is Maputo in reference to the capital city of Mozambique.
Mm.
It's not the fish. Yeah, not that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this comprehensive agriculture development program, came out of Maputo Declaration, that declaration was then reaffirmed back in 2014 in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, if I'm not mistaken on that one. Yeah. Now, this was in 2014, yeah, the Malabo Declaration, a declaration made by the African Union at the 23rd Ordinary Session of the AU Assembly in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea.
Mm.
That was the same country that gave us that adult entertainment that almost... the CAA...
Hey, man, that man is a viral... He's a viral celebrity.
Parliamentary. He could have picked anyone, but anyway... Now, the CAADP's agenda in 2014 was expanded to several agricultural transformation commitments with specific goals and targets to be achieved by 2025.
Yeah.
Yeah. The goal of that expansion was to accelerate economic growth, reduce poverty, enhance food security through agriculture-led growth by targeting... Oh, you're gonna love this. 6% annual agricultural GDP growth by 2015 and at least 10% of public expenditure spend on agriculture?
Oh, that's another song that we've got to sing here again.
Yep.
For some reason, Helmut, I love the language that we use sometimes in our in our policy planning when it comes through on an African basis. I know in Namibia, we are masters at planning.
Yeah.
We are masters at that. Some of us even pass.
And don't forget the themes. We are very good at
that. Oh, yeah. But that's just an African Union theme.
Oh, yeah. African Union.
We love the themes. In Namibia, we are just, you know, okay, that we had a president that loved themes.
Well, we also have their themes here. We are too few to be poor. We're going for a break in a few seconds before the president shows up.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. 16 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is your Drive Time Show, Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. You were saying, in Africa.
So in Africa, we love the themes.
Yeah, the themes.
We had a president, obviously, in Namibia who was also theming every year, every calendar year, which also slightly didn't make sense to anyone.
Re-something.
And reinventions and rediscovery and stuff like that. The themes were nice. It showed, you know, real panache and flair for the moment. But everyone in the rest of the Namibia was like, what are you
talking about?
What's the theme? You know, in many cases, I would read the themes on those statements. And then just tomorrow, I would forget the theme. And then I would interview someone who remembers the theme, comes and promotes the theme. And then it's like, ay toch, bro. How does that theme fit into anything that Namibia has to achieve? But still. The theming on the AU level helps to coordinate what they want to concentrate on. So far, have you observed how quickly the discussion on reparations has sort of like gone silent this side of the year? You know, everything after July.
At the beginning of the year, it was
full steam. You know, discussions were going on. We had our vice president talking at public events here in Namibia. And then Namibia is sort of like the poster child for reparations discussions on the continent. And when the UN General Assembly thing comes, it's only Mia Motley from Barbados, who is the Bahamas, from the Caribbean. She's the only one there championing reparations at that discussion.
Everyone went mute.
We obviously come to a setting of looking at agriculture, rural development, and water, sustainable water usage. Much of the concerns, Helmut, are literally the Ethiopian Dam, the Blue Nile Dam.
The Renaissance Dam
was another close to war. It was another war, a possible war between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia. Why? Because Ethiopia didn't know. They refused to acknowledge the participation of Egypt and Sudan. Even though Sudan was busy dusting itself out with its own civil war, those guys were literally on the verge of declaring war on Ethiopia. Even though they were busy boxing each other there in the streets of Khartoum, They were literally about to say, hey, listen, now we've got a new target. Let's put our differences aside. Egypt was asking a question of, what are you doing? Why are you damming up the Nile? But here's the double-sidedness of Egypt. Egypt is willing to literally redirect a part of the Nile to run a green scheme in a very dry part of the desert in Egypt. There are plans to redirect a part of the Nile, Helmut.
Yeah.
So literally we're talking about a man-made canal system to literally start a green scheme in sand. Unproductive soil. Because what? The Nile Delta, which is literally where Cairo and much of Egypt is, ancient Egypt is based upon.
Yeah.
That part where the Nile flows into Egypt. It literally is like, you know, flowing downhill. And then it flows into a very fertile piece of real estate where it's literally the only part where much of Egypt's agriculture is concentrated, which is right next to the Nile rivers. The Nile River, and it's literally, it's estuary. What's that word that they use? Estuaries. You know, as they flow out. Because tributaries are contributing to a river, so they flow in. And an estuary is, that other word literally means as the river has many, many split points that literally flow out into the sea. That is the only part where the Egyptians can farm. The rest of Egypt is just one dust bowl with fences around it. That's it. That's the issue with Egypt. So Egypt obviously has to chart and develop its agricultural sector itself. And there's a plan to direct a part of the freshwater source from the Nile to go in greens, to greenerize that part of the desert. Now you're sitting with a scenario in terms of, okay, if agriculture is now becoming a cornerstone of things,
yeah,
water is at the heart of everything. Yeah. There is the Orange River here with us in South Africa, which South Africa claims fully under international law. And this is where the South Africans literally come short up against the discussion. In international law, if it's a natural border, like a mountain range and a river, it's a 50-50 split.
No, we're not having that discussion. We'll just talk about, where do you guys discover oil? Yeah, that's how that conversation
They've got an energy minister. What was that minister's name? The guy, I almost said a very ugly word. The guy who's got frog-like eyes, Gwede Mantashe, who literally went and said, yeah, it's because of Namibia that South Africa is not enjoying the benefits of the green energy transition discussion. But they just got 12 billion euros, which translates to almost like 300 billion rand. What did Namibia get? We got a couple of billion Namibian dollars. That's the chump change we got out of the just energy transition discussion. The South Africans are getting 12 billion.
No, I think that was more of a diversion because he knew that money, as soon as it lands in South Africa, is going straight to Italy. We exchange for Lambos.
What? No. Bruh. What people, it's the same thing we are seeing here happening with us.
Who's going to get to attend us?
No, it's not even that. It's like what the Chinese do. If you want the money, there's a European company. Let them do the job. We on Suknik, your local content policy engagement. Yeah, they can come and build a thing and polish the stuff. But it's a European company at the head of everything.
Now, look at the condition we have created. Because that does not give a lot of local companies, you know, a space to participate.
Yeah.
Because you have set a very terrible example of every time that you are given the money to do everything yourself, that money disappears into thin air. Case in point, a very easy one, Mozambique. The most recent one.
Oh, I got the standing committee's visit to the Namra infrastructure.
I received it.
You saw the report.
I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah. Madagascar, yeah? Was it Madagascar you spoke of now?
No. Mozambique and South Africa. Look, the most painful thing about, the whole, is it the Makhandla Commission? I'm calling it
Matlanga. No, Helmut, go down. It's a NGA, not NKA. Don't say
I'm
matanga.
Really hoping that's not an insult.
Madlanga.
No, no, the thing is, a part of me is thinking Matangara. Because.
How no. In everything that is holy did you get to Matangara?
I'm hungry.
We're all hungry. We're all.
So let's call it Matangara Commission. The thing is, these guys stole $2.2 billion from one hospital, man. One hospital.
Yeah.
$2.2 billion. By, you know.
Well, that hospital should have had some fancy
that
facilities.
That hospital should have been some, you know, state of the art.
Yeah. But for two billion. That hospital,
2 billion.
That hospital should have been running a chauffeur service, having free Wi-Fi, and even have an education unit for young children to be taught there.
Now, our problem now is education here now is beginning to bite us really hard, because these guys, you know, these are not your regular, you know, tura boy type of thieves.
Yeah.
These are people that knew what they were doing because of how, you know, of how they managed to basically hide everything under over 200 shell companies.
Yeah.
So they basically knew how the economic world and the world of finance and the world of entrepreneurship, they understood all these things and how they navigated all the South African legal loopholes to basically pull this off. That also shows you that these are the guys that actually has the, you know, they have the intelligence to basically run the country.
On a
sophisticated level.
Criminal method.
Except they were running it on a very selfish, selfish, self-gratification method.
Criminally induced method.
Yep.
Which technically indicts the whole political class of that country.
Take Mozambique for example. If Mozambique goes back to all this, whether it's Credit Suisse or the IMF or World Bank to ask for another $1 billion to revamp their maritime infrastructure, and the World Bank or Credit Suisse tells them, okay, you know what, we're going to give you the money, but the company that is going to, the company that's going to build whatever it is that we are going to use this money to build is going to have to come from either China, the U, it's either Europe or the US. What will their excuse be? They won't have any, because the last time they borrowed money, the last time they were trusted with money,
people were buying verpas.
Exactly.
The president's son that had nothing to do with the project
was partying big.
Was somehow the richest man.
Yeah.
From money meant for a fishing fleet for the country.
They started to fish the money. The Minister of Finance, black with a Chinese name. I like that guy. Now, the Minister of Finance was also involved in that. And then he left the country and ran to the furthest country he could find.
South Africa.
Like,
and then South Africa were like, yeah, just come and arrest the guy here. Here's the extradition.
Yeah, you can imagine, the South African guys were like, seriously, dude?
And guess where he runs?
I mean, for any economist, you're really dumb.
Even he runs to Johannesburg of all places. Do you know how far Johannesburg is from
Mozambique?
How much is a couple of kind? It's like 150 Ks from the Mozambican border. Do you know how far Maputo is from the Mozambican border?
So this guy was sophisticated enough to pull off $2.2 billion heist.
Yeah.
But he was terrible at picking a country that doesn't have
extradition
treaties with his own country to run to.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
From the same political party he was voted in with.
Now, let's combat food insecurity and use agriculture to revamp our economy on the continent.
Mm.
Fast forward to this year, the AU adopted a new agriculture development strategy that draws continent's blueprint, basically, increasing its agri-food output by 45% by 2035.
Bold, I'll say once again, bold.
Really, really, really
bold.
Really, really bold.
Why do I say it's bold, Helmut? Because of Africa's greatest sin that we keep committing. We keep attracting investors only for mining, only for extraction activities. But now you go ask the question of, okay, so what do we do about food?
You know, one thing, you know, I think one thing that we fail to understand about other sectors that are, okay, there are a lot of sectors that are very, that have been known to thrive in the middle of a war zone, and mining is one of them. Yeah, is one of them.
Mm.
There are a lot of countries that are war torn, but mining activities are still taking place. And, more often, these mining activities have reached an agreement with some chance of, you know, with some nearby a gang for their own protection and exploitation of the locals. All these things take place.
Yeah.
But, now, things like agriculture and tourism, for example, those are impossible to run in a war torn country. But before we continue, commercial break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We continue. So, combating food insecurity on the continent. It's very easy to say. The English, very easy to speak. But the farming itself for countries like, if you look at, why political stability is the core foundation is, when you look at, food security or, being looked at, on an African Union level, it's safe to say that countries like Namibia already have a few steps ahead because countries like Sudan, they have to start on the foundation of political stability before they get to where we are of more like setting all the legislations in place because all these things need regulation. So on an AU level, we want to combat food insecurity and build our agriculture infrastructure, come up with agriculture initiatives that will not only help us combat food insecurity or achieve food security, but also help us contribute significantly to our national and overall continental economy. Now, that race itself, Namibia is countries like Namibia, Botswana, South Africa, and Zambia, throwing Zimbabwe, I think, in that bucket. They are a couple of steps ahead because the political stability. We don't have it 100%. We do have our squabbles here and there.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we are like one of that couple that have been quarreling for a very long time, but they're still together. They do quarrel, but they know how to figure their stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're already a couple of steps ahead, but, for countries that are in the middle of a war zone, for countries that are mired in armed conflicts, they have to start from, first of all, putting the guns down and learning to live with each other with their differences because they will never be the same.
No, they won't.
Yeah. They will have to learn to live with those differences and then set up the infrastructure, and then lay the legislations that will regulate the infrastructure that they are going to set up. And that's when they are going to reach the level we are.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to talk about, let's stop bombing each other because we're already not doing that. Now, for those that are already bombing each other, they will have to start from there. So when you look at it from that angle, we're already a couple of steps ahead. So now here's the thing though, we could easily say screw everyone else. We're going to do we are Namibia. We're going to do us. We're going to ignore everyone else, except when you think of it from the AU level and Africa Continental Free Trade Area, it doesn't work because Namibia can produce as much as it wants to produce agriculture wise or extractive or in anything. who are we going to sell it to if all our neighbors are, you know, have gone trigger happy? None.
But okay, but not all the neighbors go trigger.
I know our neighbors are not going to trigger happy. Even
though, even though Africa did have its own world war, it probably potentially had the most armies participating in the 90s, where Namibia was also present in that conflict.
Yeah. The point I'm making is that it can't be, you know, initiatives like the Africa Continental Free Trade Area cannot be done by one African country.
It can't.
It can, because it's not going to be a Africa Continental Free Trade if it's one country. It's just going to be Namibia.
Yeah. Or if it's one country dictating everything and supplying everything, manufacturing everything for the continent, which already is the threat, because it seems like Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa are the three best economies that provide for these avenues, these entry points. I mean, anywhere else, either the African country has to import the cars from Europe or Asia directly, and there's no close, what they call it, sort of like supply on the continent that helps facilitate for needs, supplying a need, or supplying a product for the needs present in the market. The discussion that still then comes out, Helmut, is one based upon, these three continents and also Morocco. Yeah. So put in Morocco there. Yeah. Would then these four economies that would then become sort of like the best positioned to technically cater for almost everything regarding the AfCFTA's successful implementation, which would be the same thing, for example, that the EU was based upon. The successful implementation for the EU's basis was you need someone's strong economic activities. Who was it? France and Germany, the UK slightly. There was another country also that had a decent amount of factories as well. All of them, most of them would just be like adequate manufacturing bases. And then the rest of the zone's economy was like, okay, no, you guys don't need to manufacture anything because we're standardizing everything from Germany to Greece. Now that could be a threat, Helmut, under the AfCFTA. If the standardization happens that Nigeria decides for ECOWAS, Kenya decides for the East African neighborhood, South Africa decides for everything SADC, Morocco, even though people want to argue with Morocco about Western Sahara, Morocco decides for everything there in North Africa.
Because it is Egypt.
No, Egypt is just because of its military. Egypt is a strategic location. Country, because
Suez Canal.
Not just Suez Canal, but Egypt is also the largest beneficiary, besides Israel, right next to Egypt, of American military aid. And I'm talking about the aid is in cold, hard cash. The aid is not in what Ukraine gets, you know, hardware. It's cold, hard cash. Ukraine sees a small portion of a $2 billion aid package. Egypt gets stone cold $100 million just like that. Every financial year for the Egyptian economy. That's one of the reasons why Egypt, when the discussions around Egypt's particular potential, you know, turning to a civilian government discussion, things started falling apart, because the first thing that Morsi wanted to cut was all the subsidies that the Egyptian army were enjoying. All the subsidies.
Yeah, and the guys were like,
and the guys were like, this will not fly. This will not fly. This is not how. This is not how the transition works.
So basically, in Egypt, that makes the military more powerful than what you'd call civilian government, because I think that's to some degree also is the case with Pakistan. You have the military that's more powerful than that basically wields all the power.
Yeah, and
the rest is just
the downside of the two countries is literally a discussion of both of them when they got their independences. The first leader they had was a general. Egypt's first founding father was a former general from the Egypt, was a former general under the Egyptian British army situation. He was the guy that fought for the Suez Canal fight when Israel invaded from the east and took the other bank while the Egyptian army was on this bank.
Sinai part.
Yeah. And then the Egyptians took the Israelis took the Sinai peninsula, and then it was renegotiated later on, and then the Israelis said, okay, fine, take your land back. Now, when you see things like that happening, the next president after him, because he was also a guy that was there for multiple terms, next guy after him is another military general from the Egyptian army. The next guy after him is another general who decided to sort of like set the record straight for the longest record of serving.
Jeez.
Mubarak.
Yeah, Hosni. Oh, yeah. Oh.
Because Mubarak was also a general. Was also a military man. And then Mohamed Morsi comes in. A civilian guy, a politician, he's a lawyer. He wants to have an Islamic Republic. He wants a civilian-led government discussion. And then...
Everyone was like, nah.
And then Sisi is like, nah,
you
brah.
Know when you said you can have power? We didn't say that much power.
And then Sisi is like, nah, brah, what are you doing? You know, I like living on that side of the town, eh? I like my aircon. Oops. Situation kicks off. Sisi is now, once again, long-term president. I mean, Sisi stepped in when? 2013 or 2014? How much? 10 years later? He's still president of Egypt. Everything in Egypt concentrates around the Egyptian army. Now, do you see the problem? Do you literally see the problem of some economies on this continent?
Yep.
Some economies on this continent. So when we ask questions here on the home run in terms of, okay, so what does rural development technically look like on the rest of the continent from this particular rural development discussion that the 6th technical committee had recently, was go and look at the member states. What are their situations? Because I am so proud, and that's why I'm so proud of our country, Hamoud. Everywhere in there, literally, you can cut out parts of SADC from Angola to Zambia to Zimbabwe. You cut that part out. Everything from Mozambique upwards features in these AU discussions because they have to sort themselves out. They need to bring stability. They need to bring trust. They need to put programs to people in the communities that need it. They need to invest. They need to go and invite investors to come and invest in them. Because if the similar situation happens again, like the fishing scandal in Mozambique, where the private sector went like, ha, sharp guys.
Peace. You guys have a good day. Bye.
Peace. We're going to Madagascar. Peace. Sharp. We're getting on the next liner, the next Mediterranean shipping company liner out of here. Because they realized when the government was trying to hide the $2 billion debt, they knew they were going to, like you said, they knew they were going to pay it. And it's literally seen that the plans were on the table to charge more taxes to foreign companies.
Ah, self-enrichment.
So now, dear listeners, the question out here is a discussion like, and this is where you can literally use everything, every policy that Namibia is now trying to bring in, Helmut, with NDB6. Regarding rural development, agricultural development, agricultural industrialization, community-based resource management, which we all have. All these things is what Namibia is trying to achieve. Rural development at its core. And then you've got resource management at its core taking place. Now, let's position this scenario for in a Namibian context, for example, with what the governors in their governors' assessments, or what do they call it? The state of the region addresses that they had a little bit earlier in the year. If we turn to the Kavango East governor's particular plan that she cited in terms of that, Kavango East has Rundu in it. Kavango West within Kurunkuru. Kavango West has to identify three settlements, but she mentioned three settlements first, besides in Kurunkuru. Except, you know, minus Kurunkuru, that have to become formalized settlements so as to technically assist the rural development initiative that has to take place in Kavango West. It's a clear-cut strategy. It's a policy. You can see it's an ambition. This is also what the central government wants to achieve. But when you take a look specifically what's happening in other African countries, remember, Helmut, I think at the start of this of last month of October, Hende was in Rwanda, and I asked Hende, you know, what does Rwanda look like? What did you see? Even though it's the size of Comas. And he cited a discussion in terms of that it's a beautiful country. You know, their level of development of their infrastructure seems to be way higher than Namibia's, even though the country's the size literally of Comas. And then there's a discussion in terms of the amount of people in, you know, in the two countries, you know, doing that comparison always. How many people are in Rwanda versus how many people are in Namibia? Rwanda the size of Comas, Namibia the size of Namibia. 3 million in Namibia overall. I think it was close to 15 million.
About 10 to 11 million.
Yeah, 10 to 11 million jam-packed in a tiny country. Now, you obviously see the particular scenarios here, dear listeners, because there they can actually quickly roll out rural development programs alongside agricultural boosting programs to help with food security. Here with us, first thing we've got to meet is the two deserts on both sides of our country.
Yep.
Before you even get to the rural setting, identify you have got two dry zones.
On both sides.
On both sides of your country's
yeah,
borders.
Namibia, you have the Namibia in the west.
Scalari in the east. Two deserts. That's firstly where you start off. Then you've got to start with a nightmare of how do you approach rural development. Is it rural development where you find pockets of villages between commercial farms? Because I'll bet you there, Helmut, there you'll find actually adequate levels of rural development, like infrastructure allocation, infrastructure management, good governance by the local authority, because there would be a village council or a small town authority there. And then there would be like quiet farm life, like what many Namibians that I know of love to call it, quintessential farm life. Or is it the rural development in a communal agricultural setting? In a national park / conservancy / communal area setting where you've got to deal with traditional authorities. Traditional authorities that you sometimes see a cross between, are these guys, do they understand that they've got to work to the same national agenda as the rest of us?
Yeah.
Or is it my agenda for as long as I want to keep it going? Which was one of the issues also with the supposed illegal lithium mining discussion there in the Daurus area of Erongo region. Or do you have just weird scenarios where it's a communal setting where people are busy with other things, like what you call it, deciding to, you know, be the biggest livestock owner on a small patch of land and thus denying everyone else the ability to technically make use of the same piece of land for their particular agricultural needs as well. So you sit with these particular clusters and with these particular scenarios, and that's just from the human-based influences, Helmut.
Yep.
We're not even at the aspects in terms of like human wildlife conflict discussions, because Namibia has so many national parks. DRC has such huge national parks. Massive national parks. They've got national parks in a mountain. They've got national parks.
Basically, you know, one giant rainforest.
Yeah. And the weirdest thing is also, now they've also got the weird thing of resource investment, extraction activities where there's a lot of investment around of international companies. For example, that pipeline that they want to build from DRC to Tanzania.
What's that
for? To reach the Indian Ocean. That's the shortest route.
Oil pipeline?
Oil or gas, one of the two. Yeah, oil. Yeah, it's an oil pipeline. Because they've also prospected recently for oil in the Congo Basin.
Yeah, but DRC...
And it's taking place on the DRC side of the river.
Yeah, but DRC has that like, you know, 5 centimeter...
5 centimeter, how much?
Shoreline.
Oh! No, but that's down the river. That's down the river, remember?
The Congo River.
Yeah, heading to the west, heading to the west coast of Africa.
Yeah.
So the idea is that the supposedly the pipeline would run to Tanzania.
Eastwards.
Yeah. and then and it has to run through northern Tanzania. But literally in northern Tanzania was where Tanzania was also busy bringing out its own pipeline, where they literally had to forcefully resettle the Maasai traditional authority that was living there.
Wait.
Remember the thing that happened 2 years back?
Wait, was that the oil pipeline coming out of Uganda?
Yeah. It's the one from Uganda running into Tanzania
yeah.
that also has to run eastwards to the shore. And the discussion was there that obviously if you don't know your geography, dear listeners, Tanzania and Kenya border onto each other. On the border is Mount Kilimanjaro or the range, the mountain range of Kilimanjaro, where Kilimanjaro is based on. The Maasai are found on both sides of the border
between
Kenya and Tanzania. Now, the Maasai live in northern Tanzania, which is southern, borders onto southern Kenya of Kenya. The Maasai are traditional livestock herders, and they are pastoralists, meaning they move from, you know, patch to patch or piece of land to piece of land
mm-hmm.
with their livestock. What has come out with the forceful relocation of the Maasai was that the Tanzanian government under Hassan, Suluhu
Hassan, yeah.
Under Suluhu Hassan, was that they built a whole settlement for the Maasai, and they asked them, please go live there. Take your cattle and go live in that settlement, or in those settlements that we constructed for you, so that the pipeline can run through.
Sounds like a fair deal.
Sounds like a fair deal to me as well.
Except
I would have just negotiated on the aspect of grazing. Consistent grazing for the wildlife. For the livestock. The Maasai traditional leaders went and said, heck no. So now you've got a dispute popping up.
Okay, so you can't talk about development without some compromise.
Exactly. You can't talk about a notion of where literally you can see a government go out of its way to try and make things comfortable for you and convenient
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
And then all they're asking you is just stand the side of the line.
Because in some countries, just a bunch of guys with guns that will show up and say, okay, now just pick what you can carry. The rest will just burn it. Don't worry. Just,
yeah.
You know,
and we'll also take it anyway.
Yeah. You know? We're going to take it anyway.
Yeah. So just take what
you leave
need.
Or else.
Just take what
now,
you
when
need.
Someone is coming asking, yeah, I'll respect that one.
Yeah. Or they're even giving you a compromise. They're even giving you property. So the discussion of actual rural development and how it sometimes is conducted on an African scale of things under this agriculture, water, rural development initiative and economic growth and economic development aspects is puzzling. Because in many cases, you can literally see there's a resistance to modernization, resistance to actually move forward as African societies. And yeah, you just have conflict from there.
No, you know what I'm curious to, know? The whole transport, especially, yeah, the rail infrastructure, the comparison that, and I'm sure there are a bunch of videos, videos and the documentations on this. Rail infrastructure comparison, I think for the past 10, 15, maybe 20 years between China and the US. Why?
It was California and China.
California and China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because California wanted the same thing. They announced it before China.
Now,
yeah.
Who accomplished it first?
China.
Exactly. Now, what's one of the biggest hurdle that, take for example, infrastructure development like that, taking place on a scale that the China is doing it, in most of Western countries? Throw us in that bucket.
Yeah.
Regulations. That's where I think, that's where I begin to realize that they could be, if there is, they could be something, something known as, or more like, they could be something called over-regulation.
Mm.
And we are already facing that, which is why our Procurement Act is going proposals of amendments right now. Because we are coming to realize, we have regulations, yes. We have the law that just try to accommodate everyone's point of view mm-hmm. on a subject, or more like take for example on a tender that's awarded. Except, some of it can easily be described as being petty. Mm. And because of that, it's causing a lot of delays in procurement, leading a lot of SOEs and ministries, leaving them with no option but to go the emergency procurement way. Yeah. And when they do that, the Office of the Auditor General comes breathing down their neck. Where's all that coming from? A regulation. So now when it comes to, at least here in Namibia, when it comes to procurement alone, what we want to do is balance between regulating the procurement sector to make sure that money, you know, public funds doesn't disappear into iPhones with two SIM cards or Benz with two engines. And also making sure that we get job, you know, we get things done. Trying to balance those two.
SIM cards and two engines.
Money doesn't end up in Iceland.
Well, before we continue with that, let's take a live read. Velvici University for the 2026 applications, which are now open for the new programs of Faculty of Health Sciences. On offer is the Master of Public Health. Level 9 mode of delivery is distance mode. Areas of specialization will be the maternal child health, public health nutrition, mental health and well-being, food safety management systems, sustainable solid waste management, innovative approaches in pharmaceutical public health, drug regulations, child protection and adolescent health, violence prevention and intervention. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvici University, where everyone is an achiever.
Un momento.
Lipura nenge no wapongwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwevo dite okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili nehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Konongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu omafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Welcome back. We have 3 minutes before the hour of six when we just happy juju, you know, happy juju, David Shombe, same WhatsApp group. Mm. So agriculture on a continental level. Look, it's a very good initiative that would take a lot of reliance on the extractive sector. But here's one thing, though, that I would actually think I would also have fallen in if I was in one of the, a high-profile figure in any of this of the countries on this continent.
Yeah,
the extractive sector is very lucrative. The return on investment is through the roof.
I know. It's
amazing. Instant wealth.
Yeah, it's like instant porridge. Like, you know, just add water.
Yep, check.
Check, and there you go. Ciao. Mm-hmm. There's your food. Like 2 minute noodles. That's why 2 minute noodles and instant porridge don't go out of fashion. Everyone knows it's just add hot water.
That's it.
That's it.
So we are cursed by convenience.
We are cursed by convenience, and it then boils down to cheap resources, cheap land, and cheap labor.
Yeah, and then you run out of noodles. Now you have, pasta, pap, and now you have to cook. Hey.
But you still have cheap water and cheap power.
Oh, yeah, you're just reminding me one. Cooking at the village is a serious. You have to go and, first of all, you have to go and collect the firewood. Mm. And then you go and fetch the water.
Mm.
And then you bring them together. Then you build the fire.
Mm.
Yeah. And then you constantly, literally blow that fire and make sure it doesn't go off. Nah, hard workers are in rural areas, man. Now, you can't tell me otherwise. Hard workers are in rural areas. Urban areas, we are spoiled rotten.
Yeah, we've got convenience. You know, we turn a tap and we switch on a light and we switch on a, we turn a dial.
Everything is just.
There's fire and there's a hot plate.
You're just turning knobs and pressing switches. That's all you are doing.
You know, you're just ergonomically connected, to everything, all devices.
And the degree of laziness is,
And then the rural guys would come and say, wow, look at you, switch on a button. Look there. Just extend your arm. That's all you've got to do.
That's it.
That's it. Then you push the button. It's not rocket science.
I don't have to worry about keeping the fire alight, but I still burn pots.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste. That gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Not yet. Oh, yeah, not. Okay, hang on a second.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of six. That's the just a minute past the hour of Happy Juju, who is taking over our business and economic segment for the next hour. So from yours truly here, it's just something worth, now this is something basically worth looking at. Africa has plans. On paper, we have all, all these amazing plans.
Yeah.
But pulling them off, because, pulling them off is, seems to be taking a little longer because, the Comprehensive Africa Agriculture Development Program was launched in 2003. And in 2022, we were begging the Russian president to, please don't blockade. We need the wheat.
We really need it.
Yeah. From 2003. So clearly, progress minimal
very,
or zero.
Very slow. Very slow.
Yeah.
Plus also the aspect in terms of access to the same resource, land, or every time.
Yeah.
The downside has always been, Helmut, how do you try to roll out or introduce new farmers to agriculture? The biggest talking points obviously has been, Kenya, places like South Africa and Namibia, which is also a little bit of a distraction exercise because the point that we proved actually back in last month in October was, what is the real need? The real need is housing and services. The real need is not to go and be a farmer. No Namibian gets born, wakes up and decides, ding, light bulb moment. I want to become a farmer. I want to go and toil and sweat and slave off in this Namibian sun. No, everyone wants to live in a lovely air-conditioned, lovely serviced, urban setting.
Everyone will be lazy.
Everyone will be lazy. But not every Namibian wants to be a farmer. I know there is money in farming.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're going to be a gloriously rich and wealthy person. You're just going to be self-sufficient and you'll be able to, you'll be a solutionist. On the highest level.
No, you can be rich. All you just have to do is use farming to launder money. Not career advice, by the way. But, until tomorrow, same time, same place. On Eagle FM. You all have a good evening now.
Same here, dear listeners. See each other again, same time, same place. And obviously, you can still catch me on the EMS for tomorrow morning.